folded fabric and threw it over my head. The smell of fake lemon cleaner and bleach assaulted my nostrils as the sheet settled around me. I opened my mouth to protest, reaching up to yank it away from my face, but something stopped me. Someone was coming. No, more than one person. I caught snippets of their back and forth, heard their feet slap against the pavement. The sound of a door opening stopped my heart dead in my chest. I swear to God, it was her, Liam. The voice was deep, but it didn't sound like an adult. Aunt, look, I told you she'd beat us back. Suzume, did you run into trouble? The other car door opened. Someone else, Liam, let out a relieved sigh. Thank God, he said with a hint of a southern drawl. Come on, come on, come on, get in. I don't know what's going on, but I don't want to stay long enough to find out. The skip tracers were bad enough. Why won't you admit that it was her? The other voice snapped. Because we ditched her in Ohio, that's why. Above the sound of Liam's voice and the blood pounding between my ears, I heard another voice. Ruby? Ruby! Kate. I pressed both hands against my mouth and squeezed my eyes shut. What in the world? The first voice said. Is that what I think it is? The first gunshot popped like a firecracker. It might have been the distance or the army of trees and undergrowth muffling it, but it seemed harmless. A warning. The next one had much sharper teeth. Stop! I heard Kate scream. Don't shoot! Lee? I know. The engine sputtered to life and the squeal of the tires wasn't far behind. Zoo, seatbelt. I tried to brace myself, but the car tossed me back and forth between the seats. At one point, my head cracked back against the plastic side paneling and drink holder, but no one was paying attention to the strange noises in the back seat when someone was firing a gun. I wondered if Rob had given the other rifle to Martin. Zoo, did something happen in the gas station? The voice identified as Liam pressed. There was an edge of urgency to his words, but not panic. We had been driving for over 10 minutes and were well away from the guns. His other companion, however, was a completely different story. Oh my God, more skip tracers? What, were they having a freaking convention? You realize what would have happened if we'd been caught, don't you? He railed. And they were shooting at us. Shooting with a gun. Somewhere to the right of me, the little girl giggled. Well, I'm glad you find it funny, the other one said. Do you know what happens when you get shot, Suzume? The bullet rips through, Chubbs. The other boy's voice was sharp enough to cut off whatever gory tale he was about to share. Settle down, okay? We're fine. That was a little bit closer than I would have liked. But still, we'll just have to try to make better mistakes tomorrow. Right, Zoo? The first voice let out a strangled groan. I'm sorry about before, Liam said. His voice was gentle, which was enough for me to put together he was talking to the girl, not the guy who had moved on to moaning in dismay. Next time, I'll go with you to get food. You're not hurt, right? The vibrations from the road dulled their voices. A loose penny was clattering around so loudly in the drink holder that I almost reached up from under the sheet to grab it. When the first boy spoke again, I had to strain my ears to hear him. Did it sound like they were looking for someone to you? No. It sounded like they were shooting at us. Feeling left my hands, draining from the tips of my fingers. You're safe, I told myself. They're kids, too. Kids who had unwittingly put themselves in the line of fire for me. I should have known this would happen. This, not my fear of setting off alone into a deserted town, should have been my first concern. But I had panicked, and it was like my brain had melted into a simmering pool of terror. A number of things, Liam was saying, but let's try to focus on finding East River. I needed to get out. Now. Right now. This had been a terrible idea, maybe even my worst. If I left now, they still had a chance of escaping Kate and Rob. I would still have a chance of escaping them, too. I looped the straps of the backpack over my shoulders again and kicked the sheet off. Taking in a deep drag of the musty, cool air conditioning, I used the rear seat to prop myself up. Two teenage boys were in the front seat, facing the road. It was raining harder now. The fat drops were falling too fast for the windshield wipers to keep up with them, making it look as though we were headed straight into an impressionist's vision of West Virginia. Silver skies were above, and a black road was below, and somewhere in between, the luminescent glow of the trees with their new spring coats. Liam, our driver, was wearing a beat-up leather jacket, darker across the shoulders where the rain had soaked through. His hair was a light, ashy blonde that stood on end when he ran a hand through it. Every now and then he would glance to the dark-skinned teen in the passenger seat, but it wasn't until he cast a quick look into the rearview mirror that I saw his eyes were blue. "I can't see out of the back window when you..." His words choked off as he did a double take. The minivan lurched to the right as he spun around in his seat and turned the wheel with him. The other kid let out a strangled noise as the car jerked to the right, toward the side of the road. The girl glanced back over her shoulder at me, her expression somewhere between surprise and exasperation. Liam slammed on the brakes. Both of the car's other passengers gasped as their seatbelts locked over their chests, but I had nothing holding me back from flying between the two middle seats. After what felt like a short eternity, but was likely only a hot second, the tires let off a long squeal of pain before the minivan quivered to a dead stop. Both boys were staring back at me, wearing two completely different expressions. Liam's tanned face had gone porcelain pale, his mouth hanging open in an almost comical way. The other boy only glared at me through his thin, silver-framed glasses, his lips pursed in disapproval, the same way my mom's used to when she found out I had stayed up past my bedtime. His ears, which were a touch too big for his head, stuck out from his skull. Everything between them, from the wide expanse of his forehead down past the thin bridge of his nose to his full lips, seemed to darken in anger. For a split second, I was afraid that he was a red, because, judging by the look in his eyes, he wanted nothing more than to burn me to a crisp. Boys. Why did it have to be boys? I peeled myself up off the carpets and bolted toward the side door. My fingers squeezed the door handle, but no matter how hard I pulled it, it didn't budge. "Zoo?" Liam cried, looking back and forth between us. She merely folded her hands in her lap, rubber gloves squeaking, and blinked at him innocently, like she had no idea how they had come across the stowaway currently sprawled out by her feet. "We all agreed. No strays." The other boy shook his head. "That's why we didn't take the kittens." "Oh, for the love of..." Liam slumped down in his seat, pressing his face into his hands. "What were we going to do with a box of abandoned kittens?" "Maybe if that black heart of yours hadn't been willing to leave them to starve, we could have found them new, loving homes." Liam gave the other boy a look of pure amazement. "You're never going to get over those cats, are you? They were innocent, defenseless kittens, and you left them outside someone's mailbox." "A mailbox!" "Chubbs," Liam groaned. "Come on!" "Chubbs? That had to have been a joke. The kid was as skinny as a stick. Everything about him, from his nose to his fingers, was long and narrow." He leveled Liam with a withering stare. I don't know what amazed me more, the fact that they were arguing about kittens, or that they'd managed to forget that I was in the car. "Excuse me," I interrupted, slamming my palm against the window. "Can you please unlock the door?" That shut them up, at least. When Liam finally turned back toward me, his expression was entirely different than before. He looked serious, but not altogether unhappy or suspicious, which is a lot more than I could have said for myself if our situations had been reversed. "Are you the one they were looking for?" he asked. "Ruth?" "Ruby," Chubbs corrected. Liam waved his hand. "Right. Ruby. Just unlock the door. Please." I yanked at the handle again. "I made a mistake. This was a mistake. I was selfish. I know that. So you have to let me go before they catch up." Before who catches up? Skip tracers? Liam asked. His eyes darted over me, from my haggard face down my forest green uniform to my mud-stained shoes, to the psi number that had been written on their canvas toes in permanent marker. A look of horror flickered over his face. Did you just come from a camp? I felt Suzume, Zoo's, dark eyes on me, but I held Liam's gaze and nodded. The Children's League broke me out. And you ran away from them? Liam pressed. He looked back at Zoo for confirmation. She nodded. What does that have to do with anything? Chubbs interrupted. You heard her. Unlock the stupid door. We already have PSFs and skip tracers after us. We don't need to add the League to the list. They probably think we took her. And if they put in the call that there are freaks roaming around in a beat-up black minivan... He couldn't bring himself to finish. Hey, Liam said, holding up a finger. Don't talk about Black Betty that way. Oh, excuse me for hurting the feelings of a 20-year-old minivan. He's right, I said. I'm sorry, please. I don't want any more trouble for you. You want to go back to them? Liam was facing me again, his mouth set in a grim line. Listen, it's none of my business, Green, but you have the right to know that whatever lies they fed you probably aren't true. They aren't our angel network. They have their own agenda, and if they plucked you out of camp, it means they have a plan for you. I shook my head. You don't think I know that? Okay, he returned in a calm voice. Then why are you in such a hurry to get back? There was nothing judgmental or accusatory about the question, so why did I still feel like an idiot? Something hot and itchy bubbled up in my throat, drifting up until it settled behind my eyes. Oh, God. The kid was looking at me with all the sympathy and pity required of someone watching a stray puppy being put down. I didn't know if the emotion welling inside me was anger or embarrassment, but I didn't have time to sort it out. No, but I can't... I didn't mean to drag you into... I mean, I did mean to, but... I saw Zoo move out of the corner of my eye, reaching for me. I jerked away, sucking in a harsh breath. A hurt expression crossed her face, staying long enough for me to feel guilty about it. She had been trying to help me, to be kind to me. She didn't know what kind of monster she had saved. If she had, she would never have unlocked the door. Do you want to go back to them? Chubbs was looking at Liam, and Liam was looking at me. He had caught me again with his eyes, and I hadn't even realized it. No, I said, and it was the truth. I don't. He didn't say anything, only shifted the minivan out of park. The van rolled forward. What are you doing, Ruby? I willed my hand to reach for the door, but it seemed too far and my hand too heavy. Get out. Get out now. Lee, don't you dare, Chubbs began. If the League comes after us, it'll be okay, Liam said. We're just taking her to the nearest bus station. I blinked. That was more than even I was expecting. You don't have to. Liam waved me off. It's fine. Sorry, we can't do more. Can't risk it. Yes, you're right, Chubbs said. So, explain to me why we aren't taking her to one of the train stations, which are closer. When I looked back up, Liam was studying me, his light eyebrows pulled tight together by some unspoken thought. I tried not to squirm under his gaze. Remind me again. Ruby, right? I'm sure you've caught on by now, but I'm Liam. The lovely lady behind me is Suzume. She smiled shyly. I turned and raised a brow in the direction of the other boy. I'm guessing your name isn't actually Chubbs. No, he sniffed. Liam gave me that name at camp. He was a bit of a porker. Liam had a small smile on his face. Turns out field labor and a restricted diet are better than fat camp. Zoo can back me up on this one. But Zoo wasn't paying attention, not to any of us. She had pulled her hoodie up over her ears and twisted around in her seat so that she was staring over the top of it, out the back window. Her lips were parted, but she couldn't bring the words to them. The color drained from her round face. "Zoo?" Liam asked. "What's wrong?" She didn't need to point. Even if we hadn't seen the tan SUV speeding straight for us, it would have been impossible to miss the bullet that blew through the back window and shattered it. 9. The single bullet cut a path straight down the center of the minivan, exiting out through the windshield. For a moment, none of us did anything but stare at the hole and the spreading spiderweb of cracks radiating out from it. "Holy sh—" Liam threw the car into forward, slamming his foot down all the way on the gas. He seemed to have forgotten that we were in a Dodge Caravan and not a BMW, because it went from 0 to 60 in what felt like 30 minutes. Black Betty's body began to shake, rattling from more than just the holes and cracks in the road. I whirled around, searching for Rob's SUV, but the car behind us was a bright red pickup truck, and the man leaning out of the passenger window of the truck, rifle in hand, was not Rob.
"I told you," Chubbs yelled. "I told you they were skip tracers."
"Yes, you were right," Liam yelled right back, "but could you try to be useful too?"
He jerked the car left just as the man fired off another shot. It must have gone wide because it never hit the car. Not that I could tell. He fired again, and that bullet had far better luck. It slammed into Black Betty's bumper. We felt the hit like a brick to the back. Every single one of us let out a sharp gasp. In Chubb's case, he moaned and crossed himself. Zoo was slouched down in her seat, her chest pressed against her knees. Her hood hid her face, but it couldn't mask the way her entire body shook. I put a hand on her back, holding her down. Another bang sounded behind us, but this time it wasn't a gunshot.
"What in the—"
Liam risked a look back over his shoulder.
"Are you kidding me?"
My heart fell like a stone into my stomach. The red truck jolted forward, and I saw the driver, a dark-haired woman with glasses, tug the wheel to the side, trying to shake the truck free from the tan SUV that had rammed into it. I didn't need to see who was driving it to know who that vehicle belonged to. Kate and Rob. But then, who was in the pickup truck?
"It is her," Chubbs cried. "I told you, she found us."
"Then who's the guy with the gun?" Liam cried. "Her boyfriend?"
The man who had fired at us turned his attention to taking out the SUV behind him, twisting around in the window. He lasted half a breath. A gunshot from the SUV clipped him in the chest and sent an explosive spray of blood into the air. The crack of the next bullet sent the shooter's lifeless body sliding out of the passenger window of the truck. The driver, the woman, didn't so much as look back at him. I watched the red truck finally break away from the SUV's front bumper. With both of its back tires blown out, it swerved into the other lane, spinning out, until it came to a jolting stop on the shoulder of the highway.
"That's one," I heard Liam say.
I turned back, fully expecting to see Rob's gun trained on me through the blown-out back windshield of our van. Only Rob was behind the wheel. Kate was the one in the passenger seat, a rifle steady between her hands.
"Please, just let me go," I said, grabbing Liam's shoulder. "I'll go back with them. No one has to get hurt."
"Yes," Chubb said. "Pull over. Let her out."
"Both of you, shut up,"
Liam said, throwing Black Betty into the right lane and then back into the left. The SUV followed us, more than keeping up. I couldn't tell if we had slowed down or if they had somehow gunned it harder, because in the next breath, the SUV rammed into us, and not even the seatbelts could keep us from jerking forward. Liam muttered something under his breath, which was lost in the sudden onslaught of heavy rain. He rolled down his window and threw a hand outside, as if to motion for the SUV to go around us.
"Do something,"
Chubb shouted, bracing his hands against the steering wheel.
"I'm trying," he said. "I can't concentrate."
He's trying to use his abilities. The realization crept up through my terror. The fat droplets splattering the window blurred the trees around us,
But Liam didn't bother with the wipers. If he had, he might have seen the other car blazing toward us from the opposite direction. Its horn screeched to life and woke Liam from his trance. The minivan swerved back into the right lane, narrowly missing a head-on collision with the sedan. If that little car hadn't slammed on its brakes, the SUV would have plowed right into it, too. Both Zoo and I whirled around just in time to see the SUV swerve back into the right lane. Rob managed to recover quickly, and they were speeding toward us again before we had a chance to catch our breaths. "Liam," I begged, "please, just pull over. I won't let them do anything to you." "I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. I don't want to..." I squeezed my eyes shut.
"Green?"
Liam's voice cut into my thoughts.
"Can you drive?"
"No."
"Can you see better than Chubbs?"
"Maybe, but..."
"Great,"
he said, reaching back for my arm.
"Come on up to the captain's seat."
He snorted, even as another bullet pinged against Black Betty's metal skin.
"Come on, it's just like riding a bike. Right pedal is gas to go, left is brake, steer with the wheel. That's all you need to know."
"Wait!" But apparently I didn't get a say in the matter. He swerved back into the left lane just as the SUV came up for another tap. Instead of speeding up, his foot came down hard on the brake. Black Betty skidded to a halt, and the SUV blew right by us. It happened too fast for me to put up any kind of fight. He unsnapped his seatbelt and pulled me toward the driver's seat just as he stood from it. The car rolled forward on its own accord, and I panicked, slamming my foot down on what I thought was the brake pedal. Black Betty leaped forward, and this time I was the one that screamed.
"Brake is on the left!"
Liam flew against the dashboard as the SUV recovered. I heard its tires scream as Rob turned the truck around and kicked up the speed.
"Hit the gas!"
"Why can't he drive?"
I asked in a strangled voice. Chubbs pushed the passenger seat back far enough for him to climb over it into the back, and Liam took Chubbs' seat.
"Because," he said, rolling down the window, "he can barely see 5 feet in front of him. Trust me, you don't want him to drive, darling. Now, hit the gas."
I did as I was told. The car sprung forward again, sending my heart up into my throat. The wheels spun against the wet asphalt. Liam was half hanging out of the window, half sitting on it.
"Faster," he said.
The rain fell thick and heavy, but the SUV's headlights pierced the mist as I drove the van straight toward them. We were going so fast that the steering wheel shook in my hands, jerking around like it had a life of its own. I bit back a frustrated scream and tried to let up on the gas, but Liam wasn't having it.
"No, keep going."
"Lee,"
Chubbs was hunched over in his seat.
"This is insane. What are you doing?"
He had been so quiet that I'd almost forgotten he was in the van. With the speedometer creeping past 80, 90, 95, I wasn't remembering much at all. And that's when it went to hell. There was a horrible bang, 1,000 times worse than the sound of a balloon exploding, and the van was spinning, the wheel dancing right out of my hands.
"Straight!"
Liam was shouting.
"Straighten out!"
"Shit!"
The wind was knocked out of my chest by my seatbelt, but I fought against the natural turn of the wheel long enough to get us heading straight again. The car tilted back, leaving a trail of sparks on the road behind us. We were staring the SUV down again, making a second head-on pass at them.
"Keep going toward them. Don't stop!"
Liam yelled.
"But the tire,"
I thought, my hands strangling the steering wheel.
"The tire..."
Chubbs had reached for Liam's legs, steadying him before he could go flying out of the window.
"Let go,"
he snapped.
"I'm fine. I've got it now."
I didn't know what Liam had meant by "it," not until I looked up into the rearview mirror and saw the dark body of a tree come hurtling out of the woods, guided in front of the SUV by nothing other than a flick of Liam's hand. With his attention focused on the minivan barreling toward them, Rob didn't have time to jerk the car out of the tree's path. I spun my hands around the wheel blindly until we were facing away from the wreckage. I heard the sound of shattering glass and crunching metal as Rob tried to veer, only to overcorrect. When I looked back in the side mirror, the SUV was on its side in a smoking heap. Beside it was the splintered body of a tree, still rolling to a stop after the collision.
"What did you do?"
I had to yell over the chatter of the wind and road. I thought... Chubbs was the one to answer, his face ashen.
Now, do you get it? They weren't going to stop.
Liam slid back inside of the window, plopping down with a long sigh. His hair was standing up on all ends, dusted with leaves and little twigs.
Okay, Green, he said, keeping his voice steady. They blew the back tire out, so you're driving on the rim. Just keep heading straight and then start to slow down. Get off on the next ramp.
I clenched my jaw so hard that it ached.
You all right, Zoo?
He asked. The girl gave him two thumbs up, her yellow gloves the only bright spot of color in the van.
Well, I'm fine. Thanks for asking, Chubb said.
His little glasses were crooked on his face as he smoothed his blue button-down shirt.
For good measure, he leaned forward and smacked the back of Liam's head. And by the way, are you out of your freaking mind? Do you know what happens when a body is thrown from a car at high velocity?
No, Liam interrupted, but I imagine it's not pretty or appropriate for an 11-year-old's ears. I glanced back at Zoo.
11?
That couldn't be right.
Oh, so you can throw her in the path of bullets, but she can't hear a scary story.
Chubbs crossed his arms over his chest. Liam reached down and pulled his seat back upright. When he sat back, it was with a grimace and clenched fists. There was a fresh cut above his eye. Blood dripped from his chin. I saw the green highway sign through the haze of rain. It didn't matter what town or exit number it said. I just wanted to get off the road and out of the driver's seat. My entire body was numb, exhausted, as I took my foot off the gas. The minivan followed the curve of the ramp with only the slightest nudging, and by the time we reached the road, it came to a natural stop. I pressed a hand to my chest to make sure my heart hadn't given out on me. Liam reached over and put the parking brake on.
You did a good job,
he began. His voice was quieter than I expected. Unfortunately, it did nothing to calm the pissed-off snake that was coiled tight around my stomach. I reached over and punched him in the arm, hard.
Ow!
He cried, pulling away from me with wide eyes.
What was that for? That was not like riding a bike, you asshole.
He stared at me a moment, his lips twitching. It was Suzume who burst out into a fit of silent laughter, an endless stream of gasping and shaking that turned her face bright pink and left her breathless. Seconds passed with her laughter as the only sound able to float above the rain, at least until Chubbs put his face in his hands and let out a long groan.
Oh, yeah, Liam said, popping his door open. You're gonna fit in real nice.
The rain had slowed to a drizzle by the time Liam got to work on the back tire. I had stayed exactly where I was in the driver's seat, mostly because I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be doing. The other two kids had jumped out of the car after him, Suzume heading to the back of the van with Liam, and Chubbs in the exact opposite direction. I watched through the cracked windshield as he made his way toward a sign pointing us in the direction of the Monongahela National Forest. After a minute, he pulled something, a paperback book, out of his back pocket and sat down at the edge of the road. Feeling more than a little envy, I squinted, trying to make out the book's title, but half of the cover was missing and the other half covered by his hand. I don't know if he was actually reading or just glaring at the text. I had pulled us over into Slaty Fork, West Virginia, if the road signs were to be trusted. What I thought had been some Hickville back road had actually been Highway 219, in the middle of nowhere. Marlington might have lost its people, but it didn't look as though Slaty Fork had any to begin with. I stood up from the driver's seat and made my way to the back of the minivan. My hands were still trembling, as if trying to shake out that last bit of adrenaline singing in my blood. The black backpack that Rob and Kate had given me had been thrown into the back seat, covered in a few loose sheets of newspaper and an empty bottle of Windex. I brushed the backpack off and set it down next to me on the seat. The newspaper was over 3 years old and stiff with age. There was a half-page ad for a new face cream someone had oh so cleverly called Forever Young. I flipped the sheet over, looking for any actual news.
I skimmed over an opinion piece that celebrated the rehabilitation camps and was more amused than offended that Psy kids were now being openly referred to as mutant time bombs. There was also a short article on rioting that the reporter claimed was the direct result of escalating tensions between the West and East government on new birth legislation. At the very bottom of the page, past some fluff story about the anniversary of some train conductor's strike, was a picture of Clancy Gray. President's son attends Children's League hearing, is what the headline beneath it said. I didn't need to read more than the first two or three lines to get the basic gist. The president was too big of a coward to come out of hiding after a failed assassination attempt, so he sent his freak baby to do the dirty work for him. How old was Clancy now? I wondered. The pictures at Thurmond were identical to this one, and I had never thought of him as anything older than 11 or 12. But he must have been 18 or close to by now. Practically an old geezer by our standards. I tossed the paper aside in disgust and reached for my backpack again. Rob had said there was a change of clothes inside, and if that was the case, I was getting out of my Thurmond uniform once and for all. A plain white shirt, a pair of jeans, a belt, and a zip-up hoodie. I could handle that. The knock on the window startled me enough that I nearly bit my tongue clean off. Liam's face appeared there, drawn in tense lines. Can you bring those clothes to me for a sec? I need to show you something. The very second I knew his eyes were on me, every bone, muscle, and joint in my body snapped to attention. With a faint taste of blood in my mouth, I jumped out of the sliding door, taking in the sight of the van. If it were possible, the car looked worse than before, like a toy that someone had wedged down the sink and run through the garbage disposal. My fingers came up to trace one of the fresh punctures on the side paneling where a bullet had slammed through the thin metal. Liam knelt beside Zoo, who was holding on to the spare tire with everything she had, and went to work cranking the van up on the jack and off the demolished back right tire. I came to stand behind them just in time to watch Liam wave his hand in front of the hubcap. The nuts twirled out on his command, collecting in a neat pile on the ground. Blue, I registered. Liam was blue. What did that make the others? Okay, he began. He blew a strand of his light hair out of his eyes. Take out the shirt you were about to change into. I'm not changing out here, I said. He rolled his eyes. Really? You're worried about your modesty when we're going to have league agents on our tail in a matter of hours? Priorities, Green. Take out the shirt. I watched him for a moment, but even I wasn't sure what I was looking for. Feel around the collar, Liam said. He set another nut on the ground by his feet. You'll find a bump. I did. It was small, no bigger than a pea, sewn into the otherwise nondescript shirt. Chubbs has a fancy lady kit under the front seat, he said. If you're going to change into it, you need to cut the tracker out of that shirt. The little fancy lady kit turned out to be a box of thread, scissors, and a tiny piece of embroidery. On a scrap of fabric, someone, Chubbs, had sewn a perfect black square. I stared at the mark, rubbing my thumb over its raised surface. Anyway, you should probably change out of the uniform, Liam continued, but be sure to check the pants and the sweater, too. I wouldn't put it past them to use more than one. He was right again. I found one sewn into the waistband of the jeans, one in the hem of the hoodie, and even one glued inside the belt buckle. Four trackers for one girl, plus one that had been sewn into the lining of the backpack itself. Liam finished replacing the tire with the spare faster than I thought possible. Zoo helped him place the nuts back in their sockets and slowly crank the car back down. When he handed the tools to her, she knew exactly where to put them in the trunk. Here, he said, holding his hand out to me. I'll take care of them. My hands trembled as I handed the trackers to him. He threw them on the ground and crushed them beneath the heel of his shoe. I don't understand, I began. But I did, in a way. They wouldn't have gone to all that trouble breaking me out if they hadn't had a method of keeping tabs on me if I got recaptured or separated from them. Liam's hand came out toward me, and the sheer panic at the thought of his touch had me jumping back, trying to put as much air between us as I could. It still wasn't far enough. His hand dropped between us, but I felt the warmth of his upturned palm brush my shoulder, as if it had actually rested there. My arms came up and crossed over my chest, and some mangled mess of anxiety and guilt rose up from deep in my guts. I tried to focus on the Psi identification numbers on the top of my shoes to keep from jumping away again. "You are acting like a nervy 5-year-old," I told myself. "Stop it, he's just another kid." "They tell you a lot of lies in the Children's League, the biggest being that you're free," he said. "They talk about love and respect and family, but I don't know any family that puts a tracking device on someone and then sends them out to be shot up and blown away." "But we didn't have to kill them," I said. My fingers tightened around the backpack straps. "There was another kid inside. Martin. He didn't deserve to..."
"You mean..."
Liam wiped the grease and dirt from his hands off on the front of his jeans. "The kind of..." He made a vague motion with his hands, which I think was supposed to indicate Martin's plump stature.
"That guy?"
I nodded. "The tree didn't actually hit them," Liam said, leaning against the minivan's sliding door. "They might still be alive." Liam guided me back toward the passenger seat and whistled to get Chubb's attention. Somewhere behind me, I heard Zoo climb back into Black Betty. "Look," he continued, "they all wear the trackers. I'm sure another league agent will be along in a little while to help them. You can go back if you want, or we can take you to the bus station like I said we would." My hands were still by my side, my face as blank as a clear sky. But I wasn't fooling him. He tuned into my guilt like I had been wearing it plain as day on my face. "It doesn't make you a bad person, you know, to want to live your own life." I looked back and forth between the road and his face, more confused now than ever. It didn't make sense for him to want to help me, not when he already had 2 other people counting on him, that he wanted to protect. Liam opened the back door for me, tilting his head toward the empty seat inside. But before I could even consider the cost of staying with them, if just for a short while, Chubb's arm shot out and he ripped the sliding door shut in front of my face.
"Chubbs,"
Liam warned.
"Why?" Chubbs began. "Were you with the Children's League?"
"Hey now," Liam said. "This is a don't ask, don't tell operation. Green, you..."
"No," Chubb said.
"You decided that. You and Suzume. If we're going to be stuck with her, I want to know who this person is and why we got chased down by gun-toting lunatics trying to get her back."
Liam lifted his hands in surrender. What could I tell them that wouldn't sound like a complete and total lie? My head felt light. I was almost too exhausted to think. Zoo gave me a nod of encouragement, her eyes bright.
"I was a runner in the control tower," I blurted. "I saw the access codes to the computer servers the League wants access to. I have a photographic memory, and I'm good with numbers and codes."
That was probably overkill, but apparently I had sold it.
"What about your friend? What's his deal?"
The longer they stared at me, the harder it became to not fidget.
"Get a grip, Ruby."
"You mean Martin?" I said, my voice sounding high to my own ears. "Yesterday was the first time I had ever seen him. I don't know what his story was. I didn't ask." I wished I didn't know what Martin's story was. Chubb slapped the side of the minivan.
"Don't tell me you believe that, Lee. We knew everyone by the time we broke out."
"Broke out? They actually escaped?"
Shock left me speechless for several moments until I asked finally,
"Really?
All 3,000 of them?" The boys took a step back at the same time.
"You had 3,000 kids at your camp?" Liam asked.
"Why?" I looked between them, unnerved.
"How many were in your camp?"
300 at most," Liam said.
Are you sure?
3,000. Well, it's not like they gave us an official number. There were 30 kids per cabin and about 100 of those. There used to be more, but they sent the reds, oranges, and yellows away. Apparently, I had blown his mind. Liam let out a strangled noise at the back of his throat.
Holy crap,
he finally managed to squeeze out.
What camp was it?
It's none of your business, I said. I'm not asking you where you were.
We were in Caledonia, Ohio,
Chubbs said, ignoring a sharp look from Liam.
They stuck us in an abandoned elementary school. We broke out.
Your turn.
Why? So you can report me to the nearest PSF station?
Yeah, because clearly we'd be able to stroll up and lodge a sighting report. After a moment, I blew out a harsh breath.
Fine. I was in Thurmond.
The silence that followed seemed to stretch on longer than the road beneath us.
Are you serious?
Liam asked finally.
Crazy Thurmond. With the Franken-kiddies?
They've stopped testing, I said, feeling strangely defensive.
No, I just...
Liam raced through the words.
I thought it was all filled up, you know? That's why they bust us to Ohio.
How old were you when you went into camp? Chubb's voice was measured, but I saw his face fall all the same.
You were young, right?
The answer popped out before I could stop myself. The day after my 10th birthday? Liam blew out a low whistle, and I wondered exactly how much of Thurman's reputation had leaked out in the time I had been there. Who were the ones talking about it? The former PSFs assigned there? And, if people knew, why hadn't anyone come to help us?
How long were you guys in Caledonia? Suzume was there for about 2 years, I was there for a year and a half, and Lee was there for a year or so.
That's... A small, ugly voice inside my head whispered, "That's it?" Even as the better part of me knew full well that it didn't matter if they had been there for 1 year or 1 day. A minute in one of those camps was enough to smash you into pieces.
And you're what? 16? 17?
I don't know, I said, and the thought nearly knocked me back against the van. I really wasn't sure. Sam had claimed it was 6 years, but she could have been wrong. We didn't keep track of time at Thurmond in the usual way. I recognized seasons passing, but somewhere along the line I had stopped trying to mark it. I grew bigger. I knew every winter that I must be another year older, but none of it, it just hadn't seemed to matter until now.
What year is it?
Chubb snorted, rolling his eyes heavenward. He opened his mouth to say something, but stopped once he got a good look at my face. I'm not sure what kind of expression I was wearing, but it erased his exasperation in 2 seconds flat. His narrowed eyes widened into something that looked very much like pity. And Liam? His expression seemed to dissolve entirely. I felt the hair on my neck begin to prickle, my fingers twist the fabric of my uniform shorts. The absolute last thing, the last thing I wanted was to be pitied by a bunch of strangers. Regret washed down through me, flooding out even my anxiety and fear. I shouldn't have said anything at all. I should have lied or dodged the question. Whatever they thought Thurman was like, whatever they believed I'd gone through, it was bad enough to mark me as pathetic in their eyes. I could see it in their faces, and the irony stung more than I expected it to. They'd taken in a monster, thinking it was a mouse.
16, then, I said once Liam had confirmed the year.
Sam had been right after all. Something else was bothering me.
They're still creating new camps and sending kids to them?
Not so much anymore, Liam said. The younger set, Zoo's age, they were hit the hardest. People got scared and the birth rate dropped off even before the government tried banning new births.
Most of the kids that are still being sent to camps are like us. They escaped detection during collections or tried to run. I nodded, mulling this over.
At Thurmond, Chubbs began, did they really?
I think that's enough, Liam interrupted. He reached past Chubbs' outstretched arm and opened the sliding door for me again. She answered your questions, we answered hers, and now we've got to hit the road while the going is still good.
Zoo climbed in first, and without looking at either boy, I followed, heading to the rear seat, where I could stretch out and hide from any more unwanted questions. Chubbs took the front passenger seat, throwing one last look back at me. His full lips were pressed so tight together, they were colorless. Eventually, he turned his attention to the book in his lap and pretended that I wasn't there at all. Black Betty purred as Liam hit the accelerator and my entire body vibrated with her. She was the only one willing to speak for a long time. The rain was still coming down, casting a gray light around the car. The windows had fogged, and for a minute I did nothing but watch the rain. Car headlights were flashing through the front windshield, but it was nowhere near dark. Chubbs eventually turned the radio on, filling the quiet space with a report about America's gas crisis and the drilling that was happening in Alaska as a result. If I wasn't already halfway to sleep, the droning from the humorless newscaster would have put me there.
Hey, Green, Liam called back. You have a last name?
I thought about lying, about making myself into someone that I wasn't. But it didn't seem right. Even if I let these people in, they'd forget about me soon enough.
No, I said. I had a PSI number and the name I'd inherited from my grandmother. The rest didn't matter.
Liam turned back to the road, his fingers drumming on the steering wheel.
Got it.
I dropped back down on the seat, pressing my hands against my face. Sleep came for me eventually, just as the storm clouds peeled back to reveal a pristine night sky. Without the sound of rain, I could just make out the quiet song floating from the car speakers and Liam's deep voice as he sang along. 10.
Chubbs was the one to wake me. It was a quick slap to my shoulder, like he couldn't bring himself to touch it long enough to put the effort into shaking me. But it was enough. I had been curled like a shrimp on one of the cramped seats, but at his touch, I bolted out of it, knocking my head against the window. I felt its cold touch on the back of my neck as I all but tumbled in the narrow space between the front seat and mine. For a single, foggy instant, I couldn't remember where I was, never mind how I had gotten there. Chubbs's face crossed back into my line of sight, one eyebrow arched at my tangle of limbs, and then it all came back to me, like a punch to the throat.
Damn it, damn it, damn it, I thought, trying to smooth my dark hair out of my face. I had only meant to rest my eyes for a few minutes, and who knows how long I'd been conked out. Judging by Chubbs' expression, it hadn't been a short nap.
Don't you think you've slept long enough?
He huffed, crossing his arms over his chest. The van felt warmer, and I didn't realize why until I sat up and saw the dark blue fabric that had been strung up to cover the rear windshield. The reality of the situation struck me at once, with a sharp twist in my side. I'd left myself wide open in a van of strangers, so wide open, in fact, that Chubbs had been able to put a hand on me. God, I didn't know which of us had come out luckier in the end, him for not having his brain wiped clean, or me for avoiding yet another potential disaster. How stupid could I be? The second they knew what I was, they'd throw me out, and then where would I be? Speaking of which,
where are we?
I pulled myself back up into the seat.
Where are the others?
Chubb sat in one of the middle seats, dividing his time between the book in his lap and the world of trees just outside the tinted car window. I moved, trying to follow his gaze, but there was nothing to see.
Somewhere near the lovely city of Kingwood, West Virginia, Lee and Suzume are checking something out, he said.
I had leaned forward without realizing it, trying to see what he was reading. It had been years since I'd even seen a book, let alone read from one. Chubbs wasn't having it, though. The moment my shoulder brushed his, he snapped the book shut and turned to give me the nastiest stink eye he could muster.
even with his two small glasses and my knowledge of his little fancy lady kit under the front seat, I reminded myself there was a distinct possibility he was capable of killing me with his brain. How long did I sleep?
A day, Chubb said. The general wants you up and ready to report to duty. He's in one of his go-go-go moods. You may only be a green, but he's expecting you to help.
I chose my next words carefully, ignoring the smug look on his face. Let him think that if it made him feel better. He was smarter. There was no debate about that. He probably had years of education on me, had read hundreds more books, and could remember enough math to actually be useful. But as small and stupid as he made me feel, there was no ignoring the fact that all it would take is one touch, and I could have read him the contents of his brain.
Liam's a blue, right? I began. Are you and Zoo both blue, too?
No.
He frowned, and it took him several moments to decide whether or not to reveal his next bit of information.
Suzume's yellow.
I sat up a little straighter.
You had yellows at your camp?
Chubbs grunted.
No, Green, I just lied to you. Yes, we had yellows.
But that didn't make sense. After all, if they took the yellows out of Thurmond, why wouldn't they have taken them from all the camps? I began, unsure of how to ask this. When she first pulled me into the van, I thought she was just shy and skittish around strangers, but I hadn't heard her utter a single word in the entire time I had been with them. Not to me, not to Chubbs, not even to Liam.
Did they do something to the yellows? To her?
The only way the van's atmosphere could have electrified faster was if I had thrown a live wire into a full bathtub. Chubbs turned toward me sharply, drawing his arms up, crossing them in front of his chest. The look he leveled at me over his glasses would have turned a weaker soul to stone.
That?
He said slowly. Precisely, I thought, to make sure I understood.
Is absolutely none of your business.
I held up my hands, retreating.
Were you even thinking about what could happen to her when you followed her?
He pressed on.
Do you even care that your friends in the green SUV would have gladly scooped her up?
The people in the green SUV, I began, and would have finished had the door not suddenly rolled open behind us. Chubbs let out a noise that could only be described as a squawk, and just about flew into the front passenger seat. By the time he had settled himself down, his eyes were almost as wide as Zoo's, who stood watching him from the door.
"Don't do that," he gasped, clutching his chest. "Give us a little warning, will you?"
Zoo raised an eyebrow in my direction, and I raised one right back at her. After a moment, she seemed to remember the reason she had come, and began waving us outside, her bright, sunny color glove flashing. Chubbs unbuckled his seatbelt with an aggravated sigh.
I told him this was a waste of time. They said Virginia, not West Virginia.
He turned his gaze back toward me.
By the way, he added, that SUV was tan. That's some photographic memory you have.
An excuse leaped to my throat, but he cut me off with a knowing look and slammed the door behind him. I jumped out of the van and followed Zoo. As my feet sunk into the mud and sad, yellowed grass, I had my first good look around. A large wooden sign, leaning back like someone had nearly run it over, said East River Camping Grounds. But there was no river, and it certainly wasn't your typical camping ground. If anything, it was, or once was, an old trailer and RV park. The farther we walked from the minivan, the more nervous I felt. It wasn't raining, but my skin felt clammy and cold to the touch. All around us, as far as my eyes could see, were the burned-out silver and white husks of former homes and vehicles. Several of the larger, more permanent trailers had entire walls ripped or charred away, revealing kitchens and living rooms with their insides still intact, if not waterlogged and infested with animals and slowly rotting leaves from the nearby trees. It was like a mass grave of past lives. Even though screen doors had been ripped off or warped, even though some RVs knelt on whatever tires had been slashed, there were still signs of life all around. Walls were decorated with pictures of happy and smiling families. A grandfather clock was still counting time. Pots were still on stoves. A small swing set remained undisturbed and lonely on the far end of the grounds. Zhu and I navigated around an RV that was now on its side, following a path of deep footsteps in the mud. I took one look at the RV's rusted bones and immediately turned away, my hand tightening around Zhu's gloves. She looked up at me with a questioning look, but I only shook my head and said, "Spooky." When the rain came, it hammered against the metal bodies around us, rattling a few of the weaker roofs and screens. I jumped back with a yelp when a trailer's door fell into our path. Zhu only jumped over it and pointed ahead to where Chubbs and Liam were locked in conversation. It had taken me a second to recognize Liam. Under his jacket, he wore a blue sweatshirt with a hood pulled up over what looked like a Redskins hat. I had no idea where he managed to find them, but a pair of aviator sunglasses obscured a good portion of his face from view.
"Isn't it?" Chubbs said.
"I told you."
"They said it was at the east edge of the state," Liam insisted,
"and they could have meant West Virginia.
Or they could have been screwing with us,"
Chubbs finished for him. He must have heard us approaching because he jumped and turned around. The moment he locked eyes with me, he scowled.
"Morning, sunshine," Liam called. "Sleep okay?"
Zhu darted out ahead of me, but I could feel my feet begin to drag with an invisible weight as I came toward them. I crossed my arms over my chest, steadying myself enough to ask, "What is this place?" This time it was Liam who blew out a sigh.
"Well, we were hoping it was East River. The East River, I mean."
"That's in Virginia," I said, looking down at my shoes. "The peninsula. It empties into the Chesapeake Bay."
"Thank you, Detective Duh."
Chubbs shook his head. "We're talking about the Slip Kids, East River."
"Hey."
Liam's voice was sharp.
"Lay off, buddy. We really didn't know anything about it until we were out of camp either."
Chubbs crossed his arms over his chest and looked away.
"Whatever."
"What is it?" I felt Liam turn his attention back to me, which immediately prompted me to turn my attention back to Zhu, who mostly just looked confused.
"Get a grip," I ordered myself. "Stop it."
I wasn't afraid of them, not even Chubbs. Maybe a bit when I thought too hard about how easily I could ruin their lives, or pictured their horrified reactions if they were to figure out what exactly I was. I just didn't know what to say or how to act around them. Every movement and word on my part felt uncomfortable, shrill or sharp, and I was beginning to worry that the feelings of hesitancy and awkwardness were never going to lift. I already felt like the freak of freaks without the added realization that I lacked the basic ability of communicating normally with other human beings. Liam sighed, scratching the back of his head.
"We first heard about East River from some kids in our camp. Supposedly, and I mean supposedly, it's a place where any kids on the outside can go and live together. The Slip Kid, who runs the show, can get you in touch with your folks without the PSFs finding out about it. There's food, a place to sleep. Well, you get the picture. The problem is finding it. We think it's somewhere in this area, thanks to a few fairly unhelpful blues we ran across in Ohio. It's the kind of thing that, if you're in the know, you're not supposed to talk about it," I finished. "But who's the Slip Kid?" Liam shrugged.
"No one knows. Or, well, I guess people know, they just don't say. The rumors about him are pretty incredible, though. The PSFs gave him that nickname because he, supposedly, escaped their custody a good 4 times. I was too stunned to say anything to that.
"Kind of puts the rest of us to shame, huh?
I was feeling really bad about myself until somebody told me the rumors about him."
Liam shuddered. "Supposedly, he's one of those. An orange." That single word thundered down around me, freezing me in place. Liam went on to say something else, with a lot less disgust, but I couldn't hear him over the roar in my ears. I didn't hear a word of what he was saying. Slip Kid. Someone who could help kids get home, if they had a home to return to,
and parents who remembered them and wanted them, a life to reclaim, and, potentially, one of the last orange kids out there. I squeezed my eyes shut, pressing the heels of my palms against them for good measure. I didn't qualify for